Good afternoon. My name is Lindsay Wright. I'm a fourth generation farmer and landowner in the Wenon Side area. My farm comprises sections 1 and 10 of block 1 and section 10 and 11 of block 2 of the Wenon Side survey district, a total of 472 hectares. And in recent years, section 10 and 11 have been sold, leaving a land holding of 250 hectares, and that property is currently leased. For the last 9 years, I've also been a trustee of the Southland Rural Support Trust. For 3 years of that, from 2010, I was chair of that trust, and since then have been coordinator. The Cameron and the Wright family have farmed this land since the 1880s. We saw the Wilkins arrive. If it is possible to feel a love and a responsibility for a piece of earth, then this heritage over four generations has borne these feelings into me. This is my home. This is my family home. Our family has developed the land over that time with the due care and respect that the land deserves. There is no reason to treat it any other way. During my tenure as owner, I've come to understand a lot about the physical makeup of my property, its varying topography, its varying soil types, its varying fertility. And this brings me to my first concern about the proposed physiographic zones, and in particular, the Old Matara physiographic zone. The classification of all Wendonside soils as a single physiographic zone is a broad brush approach, which, for my particular property, is incorrect. My property has three significantly different soil types, all of which display markedly different drainage characteristics. And I do not believe that they can be classified under one type. On page 19 of the Land and Water Plan, or page 23 in the section 32 report, the describing the Old Matara zone states, groundwater in this zone discharges into springs, streams and aquifers in lower parts of the Matara catchment, adding to their contaminant levels. That's a sweeping statement that in my particular case is wrong. Approximately 50% of my property does not deep drain into alluvial soils. They're heavy clay soils which were frequently waterlogged, with excess water running off into surface ditches or directly into open ditches. Artificial drainage we've put in on my property has improved the discharge into waterways by reducing that overland runoff directly into streams. The land now has the capacity to hold excess water and discharge it at a slower rate. To have my property classed as Old Matara is quite simply erroneous. My second concern is with the proposed rules around the land holding and intensive grazing areas, in particular around rules 20, 20E and 23. I won't go into detail, it's been mentioned earlier this afternoon. Now, I recognise the subsequent depth of detail in the section 42A report on this subject, especially on page 283. Section 7.601, and those suggested alterations. I support any move away from an absolute area per landholding, as I see this as flawed mathematics. In my own case, 50 hectares of my original property would have allowed for 10.6% unconsented grazing. Yet on my current property, 20% unconsented grazing. Whether the area is sufficient may still be debated. My concern is the inconsistency and the associated angst that would create. I have concerns about the recommendation in section 7.604 of the section 42A report, which says to encourage new intensive winter grazing in areas less susceptible to contaminant loss. The damage that intensive grazing could inflict on land such as my tiled ground mentioned earlier would be catastrophic. I have a further question in regard to summer grazing of crops, e.g. Green turnips or green crops intensively grazed, such as in a drought. If these crops are grazed during non-winter months, are they exempt from Rule 23? And if not, are then further restrictions to be imposed on the landholding? Over four generations, my property has seen a variety of land use types since the 1880s. Most of those have been successful. Over that time, farming practices have changed and improved. In my own case, overall stock numbers were reduced, and yet overall production increased significantly, and more land became productive. A As a farmer, I am well aware that judicious management of our land and water resource is crucial to our successful operation. Changes we have made have come about through better knowledge. Your own records will show my engagement with Bala Tikasetti for more than 10 years ago on water quality management. I now read in page 109 of the Section 32A report that I will likely experience an adjustment in the market value of land. For land within the physiographic zones with a non-complying activity status, the market value of land has the potential to decrease. With specific reference to Old Matara, the paragraph further states, these changes are expected to be long-term. From a business point of view, restrictions on land use reduce the viability of land for future lessees I may wish to attract. My property is my current business and my not too distant retirement plan. That future also includes my own children as the fifth generation tenants of this land. Significant long-term reductions in capital value will directly impinge on my future, my children's future, a future I have worked long and hard to establish. That hurts. To this point, I've addressed some of the specific and quantitative concerns I have with various sections of the proposed water and land plan and how they affect me and my property. Of equal concern to me is the broader human impact of the changes proposed by such a wide-reaching plan and how those changes and challenges are being presented to farmers. My work as coordinator of the Southland Rural Support Trust places me in a position where I both hear comment on and witness the fallout from the level of stress that the proposed plan is having on individual farmers. I feel the prescriptive nature of the document and the compliance requirements that go with that are already impacting deeply on individuals. They are unsure, even frightened, of what the implications on their livelihoods will be. This increases the stress levels in the farmers. Stress can drive farmers to make poor decisions. Poor decisions create greater stress, and these are frequently the people I am called to support. Nobody would deny that we need to manage our water and land resources well, and that guidelines are required to facilitate that management. However, with rules and policy comes the pressure of compliance. Section 7605 of the 42A report states, in my opinion, farmers and other resource users will respond to increased controls. They will certainly respond. The question is how. To expect people to embrace major change, my experience has taught me several lessons that are of relevance here. Number one, people in an adverse situation need to be recognised for the stress and the pressure they are facing. The pressures they face here are real and need to be acknowledged. Two, people facing a major challenge need to be listened to. No amount of expert advice and direction will have any useful impact if the people are not listened to. As an example, following the 2005 Matatar flash flood at the Bay of Plenty, many experts arrived in town to provide their solutions to the community and were frustrated by the unwillingness of the people to buy into those solutions. When they asked the community leaders why this was so, the response was, everyone is talking to us, no one is listening to us. Three, people affected by change need to be a part of the solution to that change. If they are not included, they will not take ownership of the solution. If they do not own the solution, they will be unlikely to respect or comply with it. Nothing about us without us. These hearings are part of a consultation process. It is important that this process becomes a conversation, not just a consultation. I'm concerned that the subjective way in which the analysis of the Section 42A report is worded may be disguising the fact that the decision may already be a fait accompli. Statements from the evaluator like, I doubt whether the level of controls, control suggested in the recommendations will lead to the kind of risks and costs of the actions listed by submitters seems to me presumptuous and dismissive. If there is one thing worse than not being heard, it's being heard and not listened to. Mention has been made of the Wind Inside Catchment Group, and to this end, I fully support the establishment of that catchment group. I see such groups as the key to the way forward, and I ask in the strongest terms that following these submissions, Environment South End will fully engage with groups such as this to develop tailored solutions with the full participation of the communities they affect. This plan is too broad and too complicated for a one-size-fits-all approach. Hea te mea nui o te ao. What is the most important thing in the world? Hei tangata, hei tangata, hei tangata. It is the people, the people, it is the people. Engage the community in mapping their own future, and they will provide the solutions.
Before you move on to your next speaker, there's just a couple of points that this last speaker has raised that I'll respond to before we move on. First of all, just in terms of the Section 42A report, it's one suite of recommendations to us. We bear that in mind when we deliberate on the submissions that have been lodged, and we consider alongside that all of the points raised in the submissions and the evidence presented to us. Now, a lot of people think the Section 42A report carries more weight than the views of the other submitters, and that's understandable because it's prepared by officials employed by the council, but it's really just one input into our decision-making process. So I just want you to understand that.
Thank you.
The second thing is we won't be having a conversation. This is a legal, semi-judicial process. Our job is to receive the submissions and the evidence, and based on that material, decide how the provisions in the notified plan should be amended. That's our job, and that's the job we will be doing. I can't speak for the wider council, and just remember, this is not the council.
Correct.
This is an independent hearings panel with two independent members.
I understand that, and that my request is that the council engages in the conversation.
There's three councillors on the panel who are obviously listening to what you say, but we as a panel can't do that.
I understand.
Okay. Okay. And just to assure you that all submitters are being heard and listened to. Right, the next speaker.